Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence with Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this July the 27th on the West Coast, now July the 28th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. And, of course, that's everywhere else east of the Eastern Time Zone as well. Welcome to the show. We want to say hello to everyone listening in around the world on the independent Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. Lots to talk about tonight. I just finished a two-hour interview with the delightful Melody Hallett and Katie O'Brien, co-hosts on KHEN Radio on the Truth Quest show. Melody hosts every Tuesday night, and we talked a lot about the genealogical research of these presidents and trying to connect the dots from one generation to the next, even amongst these characters, because we find that they're not who they say they are, and when you put that in the context of world events, you see why they don't want us to know who they are. Because their intention all along was to infiltrate and destroy many countries from within. And they've been doing that for thousands of years. And now the truth is getting out. And we are discovering at lightning speed what is really occurring in the world. People are waking up and these folks are getting desperate. And often when we bring out the facts that support these statements, like the ones I'm making right now, myself and other researchers, other guests, authors, and people who are active in truth seeking, we'll say, we come across an individual occasionally who actually has tons of solutions or has some ideas that certainly are worth considering when we are basically like hamsters on an exercise wheel trying to repair a brand new automobile with parts from a junkyard. Their system has been corrupted and is corrupted and was designed as a corrupt system to continue to be corrupt, and that's how it has survived so long. What's happening right now is we're seeing the truth and we're realizing, well, we don't have to play this game. Why not put everything on a different playing field? And let us regain our God-given creativity and become part of the creation and provide some solutions, put these solutions into action. I came upon some videos and some writings of tonight's guest, who hails all the way from South Africa. He is an author, written several books on these topics, and I would call him a proponent of what he calls contributionism. And we're going to talk about contributionism and many of his ideas tonight. First time on Evident Footprints, but I understand the second time here now on BBSRadio.com, Michael Tellinger. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Don. Nice to be talking to you.
Well, have I said anything so far that offends you or disagrees with you?
nothing yet. I'm waiting for the dirty stuff, so bring it on, please.
Okay. What time do we have in your neck of the woods right now, just for our listening audience?
It's just gone 7 o'clock in the morning.
7 o'clock. So we are about 6 hours difference, as I think we suspected. So you are quite dedicated, quite devoted to be up this early in the morning to talk about this subject, to cater to us Americans here. And But we have, I want to tell you, we have folks all around the world. We're being heard in your area, up north to Greece, all the way up to England, all the way to the Russian provinces, down to Australia, New Zealand, everywhere in between, and the same thing on the Western Hemisphere. So the whole world is able to pick up the show in one way or another, not just on the internet.
That's fantastic.
Okay. So we have a lot of people that will be very interested in what we're going to be talking about tonight. If you would, just for the sake of the listening audience and me, give us a little bit of your background, what brought you to the point where you are today, and then we'll discuss some of your more recent works.
Well, thanks, Don. Look, since I was a young child, I always used to look up at the sky and wonder about the life out there in the universe and what other beings lived there and what they were doing and so forth. Not for one second did I ever imagine that we were the only species or civilization in the universe. And then when I got faced by dogma of established religion and the control systems, I was told otherwise, which just somehow didn't gel. By the time I reached high school, I started reading books like von Däniken, Chariots of the Gods. And that was my big introduction to broad thinking and allowing myself to keep an open mind. I went to university. I studied pharmaceutics at the University of Witwatersrand here in Johannesburg, which is South Africa's premier university. And well, I worked with all the hominids and the Australopithecan discoveries in Southern Africa, the so-called cradle of mankind. And then I realized when I finished studying.
Can you hear me properly?
I can a little better now. You were actually kind of fading out. If you can stay closer to your mic, I think that will help us.
All right. When I finished studying, I got more involved in reading more material on the alternative origins of humankind and so forth, and also the information that I got while studying pharmaceutics, where you study. You can imagine everything you study at medical school pretty much. Realize that things are not as they seem, and that you have to go outside of the normal area of study to find new information and to find the real, what seems to be the hidden information about our human origins. And that brought me to a point when I wrote my first book, Slave Species of God. And, that was it.
Now, I actually had the opportunity to listen to all of the interview that you had done. I forget the name of the gentleman who did interview you. But I found that much of what you were saying correlated with my own findings and others who I know personally who have done similar research. Independently, I can tell that you bring a slightly different perspective as to how you come across this information, but the conclusions are the same. And they resonate with me, particularly because I've had similar experiences. I've had contact of sorts. I was always the one questioning why I never had contact. It wasn't a wish to be abducted or anything like that. It was merely my interest was so much that you would think because you were interested that might precipitate some contact or some familiarity on a personal level through some sort of experience. And then eventually I did have those experiences.
That sounds amazing. My feeling is also that we all share the same genetic memory, original genetic memory of all things in the universe.
Michael, you're fading out again. If you could try to keep the mic close to your mouth, I think that will help it.
Yeah, no, the mic is right up to my mouth. I think it might just be a problem with the Skype connection. Sometimes does that. I'm not sure when those times are. Let's hope it goes away.
Okay.
Don, yeah, I believe that we all have this genetic memory that we can tap into, and some of us are better at tapping into it than others, you know, and it all depends how you get affected by these frequencies that permeate the universe and especially our galaxy that seem to activate our DNA and reactivate some of the genes that have been manipulated with and so forth. That seems to be the interesting information that we're getting, especially from the Russian scientists as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. I don't dispute that whatsoever. And those frequencies, as far as what we're exposed to, are being manipulated to basically herd us into a corral, if you want to use that term, or into a pasture where we become lethargic and apathetic. And of course, if one is indulging in all the products that aid in connecting with those energies, you know, we're speaking about electromagnetic bombardment, whether it's from HARP or chemtrail spraying or the fluorides in the water and all the toxins in the foods. We're assaulted from every angle, and if one really isn't aware of it, one can be herded with the rest.
Oh, exactly. It just also came to my knowledge recently that during the war, the Second World War, all the broadcasts that were done by the Nazis were apparently done on a very specific frequency. I believe it was 440 hertz or megahertz, and that's a frequency that in some way does control people and actually make them more susceptible to manipulation.
Yes, I have thoughts about the international tuning standard in music that sort of fits that as well. That all the music is working on par with other types of music, regardless of the style. If those frequencies are accentuated and certain harmonic structures are followed, then it produces the necessary harmonics to aid in the, you know, it's a sort of neuro-linguistic programming through sound.
Yeah, I would agree with you. There's definitely something in the digital formats that we use that interferes with all the stuff. But mm-hmm. What I'd like to do is just, you know, tell you a little bit. You mentioned some people earlier, and what I'd like to do is just tell you about how I stumbled upon the information that I write about in my latest book, Temples of the African Gods. What was interesting is that because of my first book, Slave Species of God, you know, which was dealing with the origins of humankind, and never expecting to stumble upon the physical evidence of some of these early people and the activity of the early humans here in Southern Africa.
Okay, now I lost his heart.
I was in a set of circumstances. Hello?
Yes, I'm still here. We're getting a little bit of a delay with the audio, so we'll try to work through that. Are you still with us, Michael?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm not sure why, but Skype is playing up with us today.
Could be this show. The truth is coming out.
Yeah,
could.
Yeah, it could be. It's all your fault, you know. It's all your
blame it on me. I invited you over. Okay.
All right. I'm not sure where I was. I lost my train of thought there.
Well, we had been talking about the frequencies are used, and then you were speaking about your book at that point, just starting to speak about your new book.
Yeah, everyone's been, not everyone, but many scholars and researchers have been talking about Southern Africa being where the place where the first civilizations on Earth emerged. And they've been using information that they've been extracting from various ancient sources sort of writing about that, but very little physical evidence has ever come out to support much of this writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's true for me. The most exciting thing is that we now have the physical evidence of these very, very early human civilizations.
Would you describe some of that evidence? Is this evidence that you found or things that were brought to your attention?
This is the work that we've been doing and discovering these ancient settlements and civilizations that, based on our current theory and some of the evidence that's popping out, takes us back very close to about 300,000 years ago. And, that's obviously a lot further back in time than anyone's ever imagined. And we're dealing with an ancient civilization that's completely vanished from the face of the earth. And we are very quickly uncovering and discovering the remains of their settlements, all the stone structures left behind, the agricultural evidence, and the fact that they were involved in the mining of gold.
Yes, that seems to be a recurring theme throughout the Bible. I understand that Abraham was basically the keeper of uranium, and the name Ur came from that, uranium came from the word Ur. Back then, that's was called. Would it be? And you mentioned 300,000 years, and I'm sure you're referring to dating what these discoveries are leading you to. My intuition tells me that this has more likely been going on in recent times for the past 450,000 years. Does that sound like a wild stretch to you, or does it seem plausible?
Don, I lost you there. It's been gone for how long? Sorry?
I would say my intuition tells me 450,000 years. Does that seem possible on the basis of some of your recent discoveries?
It does. It certainly does. In fact, my latest attempt to look at the age of Stonehenge would be around that 450,000, maybe 500,000 years, based on some strange things I found at Stonehenge that I've never heard before about, or no one's ever brought to our attention. And there's an interesting situation here. Obviously, what we're talking about is we're talking about presenting the evidence of the existence of the Anunnaki on planet Earth.
Yes.
And their established settlements here in Southern Africa. And mm-hmm. obviously the Anunnaki were obsessed with gold, and they also had advanced knowledge of the activity of nanotechnology and nanoparticles of gold and silver and so forth, which we have seem to now be applying in various areas as well. But the fact that they talk about this place called the Abzu and where they got a lot of their gold from is an interesting thing. And there's been a lot of confusion about where the Abzu is and what does the Abzu mean. And, I've approached it from a point of reverse engineering the word Abzu and looking at the evidence. If the Abzu was where all the gold came from and the Anunnaki got their gold and they established their gold mines in, then we must look where the highest concentration of gold mines are and have been in the ancient times. And that is really what we have discovered here. There is no other place on earth where we get such a high concentration of gold mines, and the evidence.
I've lost Michael's audio again.
Ancient civilizations working. Am I back again?
You're back, yeah. We're getting sort of a log jam of the stream and then silence. So, yeah, now I'm not hearing you, so I'm going to keep talking here.
Yeah, seems to be a Scott thing.
Yeah. In light of this discovery, and you mentioned the Apsu, is there any chance that these are the ancestors to the Zulus? Just looking at the word Zu, Ab meaning from Zu?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that necessarily ancestors of the Zulu, but pretty much all African people. In any case, and all humans for that matter, but there's an interesting word, by the way, the Bantu or the Abantu people, the collective word for all the African people, the especially the ones that we find here in southern and eastern Africa, the Abantu people, and based on what Kreda Mutwa has explained to me, the African shaman Kreda Mutwa, who is the wise man and has been sharing a lot of information with the world.
Yes.
Kreda suggests that the word Abantu actually means, comes from Abantu, and he calls it the children of Antu. And who was Antu? Antu was the wife of the Anunnaki supreme commander, Anu.
Yeah.
And Abantu basically means the children of Antu, the wife of Anu, who loved the Abzu in the
Okay, and now I've lost the audio again. Apologize for the interruption. Okay. Yeah, we're getting, it seems to be on your end, Michael, we're getting sort of a delayed signal from time to time. Like your words have taken a ride on a rickshaw, and then you came back. Are you still with us, Michael?
Yeah, I'm with you. I've unplugged my headset. I hope it improves. But
I think if you're using speakers,
are you there, Don?
Yeah, I'm here. If you're using speakers, Michael, we're going to get feedback. And you're going to get a delay of the signal as well. And I'm hearing myself.
How's it?
Yeah, it sounds, we're getting a mix of a ground hum, like a low AC hum. And
how's this? Can you hear me?
Okay, that's better if that stays on. Yeah, that'll work.
How is this now?
Okay, that's working. Now, I don't know how much of a delay you're getting. I am getting a bit of a delay. If you're speaking, I'm not even hearing
you.
Let's try something if we can. Seth, if we could try reestablishing the connection with Michael. And what I'll have you do, Michael, is hang up the call on your end, and we'll call you right back. Seth, if you're listening to me, we'll do that, and maybe we'll get a better connection. So with that, while we await Seth redialing Michael Tellinger, we're discussing, the writings of Sitchin, Okay, are you with us now? Well, I see him there, but I don't hear him. Sounds like a headset problem to me.
Yeah, I'm with you, Don.
Okay. All right, we'll try to hang in there and hope that that the intrusions stop. So basically, you're saying that Ubuntu or the Ubuntu are the offspring of the wife of Anu, and this would be something that was described in the many accounts of giants coming here and interbreeding with humans.
I wouldn't say necessarily say that they were the offspring of
I've lost Michael's audio again.
If you want to call it that.
Okay, I didn't catch what you said there. It was totally blanked out. As it is right now, again. All right, I think we're going to try to reestablish the connection one more time here. Again, we have to apologize. This is live radio. And if you were going to the World Cup on a plane from the States, tickets ranged an average of $7,000 a ticket. Skype is free. Okay, you're back. Let's see if we can make this work again. Okay, so...
I'm not sure what's going on here. I've never had this problem. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, you were going to explain to us basically you were going to answer my question about the wife of Anu or us intermingling with giants.
Don, I'm also giving you the landline number here so we can try that.
Okay. Yes, we'll try that. We'll have Seth call you on that. And I guess Seth be waiting for that. And there it is. Okay. So Michael, we'll be in touch in a few moments again, and I'll just keep the show rolling here.
This is very. Yeah.
So. We've been talking now, or Michael's been alluding to his own research and the research of Zechariah Sitchin, who authored a series of books, one of the most famous of those books, or notorious, is The 12th Planet, which speaks about the planet Nibiru, which makes its rounds through the galaxy and around our part of the solar system every several thousand years. And if you haven't read the work and you just listen to the general commentary about such a topic, it's a little bit hard to swallow. It becomes very convincing, but there are some things that I personally might disagree with in that regard. We don't have to always agree with the research that we learn of that people come out with. But Sitchin has been doing this work for a long time, so he's given a lot of credit for what he's discovered. Now, Seth, I don't know if you've gotten the number. I'm going to make sure you have it here.
I'm back online with you, Don.
Okay, Seth, if you can just adjust Michael's volume now, the sound is real clear. I just need a little more volume. Okay, welcome back to the show, Michael Tellinger.
Yeah, thank you very much, John, and I'm sorry that we've had all these technical problems today.
Oh, that's okay. It happens. It happens to the best of us as well as the worst of us. So We just have to grin and bear it, don't we?
Exactly.
Okay, so you were saying now, in regard to my question about the Anunnaki intermingling with the human form here, your thoughts on that, rather than put words in your mouth, I guess I owe you at least that.
Well, look, the first thing we need to come to terms with that there were things going on here that we don't quite understand yet. And we try and put into perspective of our current view of the world and the situation in on planet Earth today. But there were things going on here that are just so weird and so strange to us that we need to be careful about, you know, talking about intermingling and crossbreeding and things like that. For example, I'll give you an idea. First of all, let me say there's no doubt that there was crossbreeding and the Anunnaki having offspring with the new Earthlings that were created. We get told that in various forms and translations of Sumerian tablets, and the Bible tells us that and so forth. But there seems to be many thousands of years of cloning that was going on, and different hybrids of beings were being created, and we see that in the fossil evidence here in southern Africa as well. We've got the Boscopoid skull, the Boscopoid skeleton, and then there's another which is about 8 to 9 feet tall with a large cranium, which we know absolutely nothing about. And that seems to be an indication of possible early humans down here. There is another bit of evidence that just came out recently that in the 1960s there was a giant skeleton uncovered in a mine that was dug in Namibia, and that information has been kept secret by the same university that I studied at, the University of the Witwatersrand, and that information is coming out. But I was just this past week in Botswana. We went up to northern Botswana to look at a place called Tsodilo Hills, which is a very sacred site with the African people, and it is called it's called Tsodilo Hills, and it's known as the creation cave of the human race. And there are a lot of interesting stories about this place, about how the humans were created at this place and how the first sexual act happened in this place when the gods came down and showed the humans how to procreate and have children and things like that. Now, at first, we would listen to these stories and go, yeah, very nice fairy tales and so forth, but you've got to realize where these stories come from, and we're dealing with what some people refer to as mythology, but then first you need to dissect the word mythology and see what the word actually originally means. And the original meaning of the word mythology actually tells us that we're dealing with stories and legends that were sworn to be true and accurate and true by priests and kings. So you've got to replace the word mythology with the word history, and then suddenly you're dealing with a completely different set of realities.
Mm-hmm.
And the so-called folklore and what we believe to be fairy tales of ancient tribes actually start to ring more like the real human history we've had. And it gets really interesting because, you know, we allow our current levels of knowledge and information to dictate to us what we believe to be true about history, and that is the furthest thing from the truth. And remember that history has been written by the victors, and in essence, that one simple statement tells us, and I can show it to you in a very simple schematic, that simple statement actually says that we know absolutely nothing about our human history. Absolutely nothing. Very, 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 very little of what we think is true is actually true.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And that sort of blows the 100th monkey theory out of the water as far as human beings are concerned.
Well, exactly. You know, this whole thing about evolution is another very interesting concept, and we throw the word evolution around very glibly and freely, and not really thinking about what we're talking about. You know, as far as talking about evolution of plants and species on the planet, yeah, there's lots of argument and evidence for evolution. There's no question about that. But then what happens is we throw human evolution into the same pot and stir it up and mix it all together and believe that humans are the consequence of the same kind of evolution we see the evidence of in plants and other species that we seem to have enough evidence of. But that is not the case. And we need to remind people that it is still, as far as human evolution is called, it's still called the theory of evolution. And, mm-hmm. and let it remain that, because there's far more proof or evidence to prove that humans did not evolve to this point where we are, in the world today, that we were genetically manipulated. And there's overwhelming evidence for that. And what we're finding in South Africa and Southern Africa is the physical evidence of those early humans that suddenly appeared on planet Earth around 300,000 years ago. And the genetic evidence tells us unquestionably that that's the case, that humans just suddenly popped out of nowhere and or somewhere as a complete species, and here we are, 300,000 years later, still mining the planet for gold and many other minerals. And it seems that the world started out with the humans as a mining colony and is now even a larger mining colony, with the people being just as ignorant of their origins as they were in the beginning.
Yes, and that's not so far-fetched, Michael, when you take into consideration or into account the fact that they are still attempting to further manipulate us genetically and go so far as to introduce electronic devices, chips and what have you, nanotechnologies into our bloodstream to control us with these advanced technologies. All of this in the pursuit of hiding the fact that we are not alone in the universe. Ultimately,
exactly.
That's the goal, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think the interesting thing is that right at the beginning of this interview, you said something that really struck a chord with me. And that is, if you follow the work of Bruce Lipton, the wonderful Bruce Lipton, he makes it very clear to us that an organism under stress cannot function properly.
Yes.
And it's not new to me, because that's what I studied at medical school as well. So once you put an organism under threat or under stress, it cannot function properly, and a human being is an organism. And if humans are under stress, they can't think clearly, they can't make decisions that are appropriate to the situation, and what is happening, I believe, is that the rise of consciousness, the unstoppable rise of consciousness throughout the world, which the control groups, the royal political elite control groups, call them the Illuminati if you want, or call them whatever you want, it doesn't really matter. They are there and they're manipulating us. What is happening is that the rise of consciousness among the general global population, which is unstoppable, they cannot control that. They are trying their best to control that, but they can't really. That situation is backfiring. And I believe that it is now causing the Illuminati or the control groups to experience stress and make decisions that are not necessarily good for their own cause. And it's starting to rattle the cage. And I think it's very interesting and exciting time to be alive, quite frankly.
Absolutely. You know, there's a simple scientific principle which is part of universal law, and it's really in the creation. It's the creation's own safeguard, if you will, against self-sabotage. And in a free will universe where all is permitted but tolerated only to a certain extent when it usurps the boundaries even of evil itself, where evil has to compete to descend to the level that what's going on is at right now. And we even call it a name. It's beyond evil. It's beyond insanity and psychopathy.
Yeah.
All of that in consideration, and what you say is very true. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'm sure the listeners are saying, yeah, Don talks about that. His guests talk about this all the time. This is no accident that people from different parts of the world are coming to the same absolute conclusions that what is happening, what we're witnessing, is really the decay, the collapse of this repressive system that has been here for hundreds of thousands of years, particularly yes. the past 13,000 years in full swing, we could say. Exactly. Your thoughts on
that? I'm glad you brought up that number 13,000 years, because that is also the evidence that we're finding here, is that this very vast civilization of over 10 million stone structures, all connected by many thousands of miles of channels that channeled energy and stone structures and cloning chambers for the humans, the early prototype humans, and agricultural terraces that cover entire mountains and so forth. I mean, that is just spectacular when you put this all into place. And look, I'll be showing all this to the in the United States on my tour of the USA, which starts on the 26th of August until the 24th of October. But when you put all this into perspective, you realize that this civilization existed here for probably about 270,000 years. Continuously, it's an unthinkable number to most people, an unthinkable period of time, and yet the evidence is here. And then something happened about 13,000 years ago, the so-called Great Flood that the Bible talks about and many ancient cultures talk about, or some call it whatever you want, but it was obviously a huge geophysical effect, an event that pretty much wiped out all the civilization on planet Earth. And then it restarted again. And what's exciting about these discoveries here in southern Africa is that we're finding the evidence for that. You know, vast settlements covered by soil, sea sand and fossilized fish and seashells and tops of mountains that are scattered among some of the stone ruins that we're finding and so forth. And that all adds to corroborate these ancient writings and the so-called mythology. And then we realized that here was a civilization that existed for, as I said, about 270,000 years. And they were really well looked after. They were well fed. They were a cohesive society that lived here. And the only difference is that they only had one objective, and that is to mine gold. They did not have money. They did not have trade or barter systems. They did not have a concept of value, which all of these things only emerged after the flood about 13,000 years ago. And that last 13,000-year period is, as you said, the period during which most of the turbulence that we are experiencing on Earth now really rose and arose. And it's important for us because if you mentioned the thing contributionism, which is something that I've been promoting for a number of years now as a new social structure for a new world, where we look at a global society without money, without the concept of value attached to things, and without any form or system of barter or trade. Now, to most people, that's unthinkable. And yet we have a society that lived here for 270,000 years that operated under those conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really exciting.
Doesn't that indicate, in a sense, that those people were conscious enough or connected enough to things of the higher order of the creation? In other words, they're merely expressing the natural laws that were given to them as their birthright. Could you conclude that?
Don, this is where it gets interesting, because it was a system that was imposed by the slave masters, by the Anunnaki. Okay, not realizing that they're actually promoting the system that permeates throughout the universe. Because, you know, a lot of people, again, through ignorance and through manipulation, of the human race, believe that money is a consequence of natural evolution or something stupid like that. It is not. Absolutely, categorically not. Money was a tool of enslavement and control that was introduced very specifically and categorically at a specific time in human history by the controlling royal political elite groups to control the humans because they started getting out of control and they needed a different way to control them. And money was that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because until money was introduced, people were really enslaved through other means, through this previous system that existed. And then things started going astray. And after the flood, especially, when they had to start mining gold with greater vigor, and they had to, you know, also mine all kinds of other minerals, I guess. We see very strong evidence of iron mining of iron and copper and other minerals. I mean, I even found traces of hafnium in some of the artifacts that we found, which is very, very strange. You know, hafnium is linked to plutonium and uranium and those kind of metals, and it's very, very rare to find. And yet we find traces of hafnium here in some of the artifacts that we found. It's truly staggering when you allow all the stuff to filter through trying to understand what is going on here. So now you got to ask yourself, so if money is the thing that was introduced to control people, and money is still today, and more so today than at any stage in human history, is the root of all evil. Money causes all the stress and all the strife on planet Earth. And the problems, it is the cause for most, if not all, of the crimes that are committed on planet Earth. And so what are we going to do about it? Because as we sit on Earth today, and you look at the economic structure and the economic crisis and the problems that every person, every country in the world find themselves in, there is no happy outcome. It's as simple as that. And if people think, oh, the markets are going to improve and this is going to get better, and that they absolutely deluding themselves. There is no happy outcome. It is impossible for a happy outcome to emerge out of this situation.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. In fact, I was sort of alluding to that when I said it's like trying to repair an expensive automobile with parts from a junkyard. This system has been created with the purpose in mind that you've described. It's a system of slavery, and to think that you can put a new slave master in there is going to end slavery is absurd.
Yeah. So, you know, what do we do? What do we do as people that are experiencing rapid growth of consciousness, embracing a much greater universal spirituality and a unity and a oneness that we belong to, of a universal, you know, family of conscious beings that are linked to the divine creator or the divine creative process? What do we do about the situation that we have on this planet? Because it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And as I said, there is no happy outcome. So we gotta get to the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is money. There's only one problem here. We have money. So we need to eradicate money and the use of money and anything to do with money or the value systems that have evolved around the use of money. And to some people, that just sounds absolutely unbelievable. Well, I can tell you, after 5 years of studying this and looking at it, nothing can be further from the truth. The moment you eradicate money and you start looking at a system where everybody participates and contributes their natural talent or their ability or whatever it is that they were trained in or their passion that they followed and have developed into a skill, if everybody contributes their individuality to the greater benefit of the community that they live in, not to the greater benefit of themselves, but the greater benefit of the entire community, you're dealing with a structure, a social structure that is so cohesive and so strong that the abundance of everything is so overwhelming we can't even begin to contemplate it. And that's the biggest surprise. most of the times when you throw out this concept of contributionism, we've got to eradicate money, remove the concept of value on any form of barter or trade, people instantly think, oh, you want to go back to living, you know, Stone Age, living in caves. And that's, again, that's just thinking completely irrationally. What you're doing is you're unlocking the human potential. You're unlocking the potential for limitless growth in science and technology and limitless explosion of previously oppressed and suppressed information around free energy and new discoveries that have been suppressed by the Illuminati and the control groups because they can't allow the humans to have free energy, the cure for all disease, and things like that. The moment people have free energy, they are pretty much free. They can do what they want. And the moment people know how to cure disease and be at ease or in harmony with Gaia or planet Earth, they realize that they can heal themselves from any kind of disease, and that this whole pharmaceutical monopoly is just a way of controlling people and keeping them sick and dumbed down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it goes. So in a nutshell, I know we're coming to the end of the hour, so in a nutshell...
Well, we can run over a few minutes to make up for what we've lost with the interruptions and you know, the technical issues. So go ahead.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. So what we're dealing with is a system where we got to go back to decentralizing the population or the world that we've created, where everyone has been flocking to the cities and creating these giant metropolitan monsters that cannot survive, and that are just like, you know, people become like rats. There is more misery, more unhappiness, more hunger, more homelessness, more conflict, more warfare and than ever before in human history. And all of this is as a result of money and the control of power on this planet.
Yes. Now, for those that that understand this and come to the realization that if this is true, and you know, we want to allow everybody the privilege to make the choice they want to make in regard to this information, and we consider that the financial system of a fiat financial system and based on usury credit or debt, in other words, the issuance of debt instruments to make debt go away. It's not possible. It has to collapse. It basically feeds itself, much like a vampire that can't find a victim and decides it's going to take its own blood to satisfy its thirst for blood. It has to collapse.
Yeah.
The concept of usury credit or and that's buying things where you don't even have any tangible assets to back up the purchases that you make. They trained everybody to accept this system as the only reality. And as soon as one begins to think through the heart, in other words, they allow this information to flow through their heart and move out of the head, the belief system disintegrates, basically. And so I see our coming to a mutual across the planet understanding of this. We have to let go of this illusory concept of what money is, because that is where we've given away our power. We've given our power away in place of an illusion and for the cause of an illusion. Go ahead, comment if you care to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, basically, what we got to just be, you know, what you say there is fantastic, but that's those are words that will ring with the people that work in the financial industry, and that for the common man on the street that doesn't understand this complexity and this mad world of finance and commerce and international trade and all this kind of rubbish that our heads have been filled with. What the hell is this trade all about? What is trade? You know, most people grow up and they go through life believing that trade is the alpha and omega of life. That's why you're born, so you can trade. It's the furthest thing from the truth. You know, and we need to just make people stop and just think about that for a few minutes, that that is not the situation. You're not born to trade. You're not born to work for someone else. Or you're not born to come up with some scheme so you can make money to put food on the table at the end of the month and pay your electricity bill and pay somebody for rent and so forth. Those are all the things that were created to keep us enslaved and running around like little busy bees and lab rats, keeping ourselves busy so it takes our attention off the bigger thing. The fact that we are spiritual beings, given an opportunity to enjoy life and to enjoy the miracle of and the beauty of existence in a physical form on this planet, and then moving on to another state. And what's happening here is that because of the absolute manipulation and enslavement of the body and mind of humans for so many thousands of years, that that fundamental understanding of our humanness has completely evaporated. So, and it has evaporated through the enslavement and the using of money and the fiscal systems. So we need to make people just stop and think for a second. Money is a fabricated, a synthetically created concept that does not belong in any form or way or form in human life. It does not, and linked to that is the concept of trade and barter and any of these things that are linked to any exchange of services for a proposed value of other services or things. And that is a tall order for some people to swallow. And like I said earlier, it's a tall order for some people to swallow until they start to think out of the box. And mm-hmm. they realize that the abundance of things, when you remove money, you remove value attached that we've created, value that's attached to things, you remove that, you realize that when people start to work cohesively and contributing their natural talents to the greater benefit of all in their community or their society, things change so quickly and so dramatically, it is quite staggering. And I'm involved in a small project like that in the small town that I live in, and then we hope to turn that into a contributionist town very soon. And I believe that once one town becomes a contributionist society where people have free electricity, free housing, free water, and then in a few years free food because they actually look after themselves, you'll see how quickly that affects all the other areas and towns around that specific little town. People are desperate. They need solutions. And I think the time has come for these kind of solutions to be implemented.
Mm-hmm. This is exactly why I brought you on the show, by the way. And I have so many thoughts and ideas that I want to share, but, you know, you're the guest on the show, and I want you to be able to bring these things forth. Basically, you know, we're taught these sayings as we grow and move through life, as we grow up, grow older, and become responsible adults. And basically, we're conscripted into the world of certificates that are issued through the laws of the sea, come to the law of the land. And so our real identity is obfuscated by all the governmental documents that are created to tell us what the official policies are for human behavior and conduct on planet Earth. As a result, we never find out who we really are as long as we're trapped in this matrix or this belief system, accepting the things that we're told, no matter how ridiculous they are, because those that are wielding this illusory money somehow have this imaginary power over us. And so we're encouraging people to think, like you said, Michael, outside the box and realize that the solutions inside the box are not there. You have to go outside to get the box to find those solutions, don't you?
Exactly, and that's exactly what I attempted to do, and I believe I achieved pretty much most of it with my thoughts and my theories on contributionism, is that every socio-political system that we've had as a species, as the human race, has failed us. Every single one. Okay, so we can't go back to any one of those and try and fix it, like you said earlier. It's not going to work. So we've got to find a completely new socio-political system that we take forward into the world. And that means if we look at the common denominators that have caused the failure of every socio-political system, the one overriding and the only common denominator that causes its failure is money, the concept of money, the value systems, barter or trade, or barter and trade, the concept of that. So we need to move away from that and create something completely different. Now, imagine a world where, think of it today. I mean, 90% of the global, or more of the global population is miserable. People are miserable. They hate their lives. They hate their jobs. They hate their boss. They wake up every morning. They hate the fact that they've got to go and catch a train or a bus or sit in the traffic or walk in the rain and the cold and the blizzards to get to some stinking job that they hate just so they can earn a little bit of money at the end of the month to buy bread and milk and pay for the bloody electricity and pay for all the expenses that have been created by the elite to enslave us. Now, that is the situation. It's worse now than ever before. The misery and the negative energy that gets spread into the world by all these unhappy and miserable people, and they might be pretending that they're happy, but deep inside they are very deeply unhappy, and that's what causes most of the disease in the world today, as well, is that suppressed, sadness. And they just, look at the billboards and watch TV and they get entertained for a little while just to forget that they're really deeply unhappy with their life. Now imagine how that kind of negative energy will change if everybody in the world wakes up tomorrow morning and says, what a wonderful day, I can't wait to put the final touches on the rocket that's going to Mars because I'm a rocket scientist. Or I can't wait to finish the last little bit of design on my new sports shoe that I've designed. Or I can't wait to finish designing the new alternative energy system. Or I can't wait to do whatever it is that they've chosen to do, what they have chosen to contribute towards the society, not for reward of money, but because of that's what they do in their society, from rocket scientists to farmers to bakers to shoemakers to glass blowers to everything you can possibly imagine, unlocking a bottomless possibility of vocations and abilities that people can suddenly do, where previously they were told that you can't do this or you can't do that because it is financially not viable. And suddenly, as we are today, bankers are the guys that decide what we can and cannot do because they tell you that they're not going to give you a loan or you can't do this and can't do that because it is not financially viable. I imagine if you remove that and you allow people to do whatever it is that they're good at and they're passionate about to make the world a better place, the energy flow through the planet is just going to explode.
Yes. Well, many things come to my mind while you're talking, and I'm in agreement with everything you're saying. Do you think it's reasonable? Let me pose a question to you to say that such a massive or drastic change of consciousness and experience, because we would have to make different choices, should be based on a premise. And that maybe the premise should look at the bigger picture first before we minimize ourselves, before we limit ourselves. Say, for example, the premise of all of this is we are not alone in the universe. And if we begin from that perspective, then our actions and our activities and our thoughts and our deeds are all going to be based upon discovering that truth. Wouldn't that be a marvelous way to found such a movement? Or, and you're free to disagree with me, too.
Well, I guess it would be a premise to start such a movement. But at the same time, you're gonna find a lot of people that are still not comfortable with the fact that we're not alone in the universe. So until that's very obvious to everybody on planet Earth, I would actually want to leave that out of that equation, because I think it'll come to people very quickly once they get immersed in this new system, this what I call contributionism. You know, call it whatever you want, but the moment that kind of system kicks in, the people's ability to open their mind and the flow of information, because now remember, you're not going to restrict anything. Flow of knowledge and information, which today is controlled by the Illuminati and the control of the media that tell us what they want us to know and keep the real information and the real news out of the mainstream media. Now you can imagine how quickly the media, which is now no longer controlled, is going to tell the people what's really going on in the universe. So the knowledge of the fact that we are not alone in the universe will spread very quickly, with substantiating evidence and information to support that. That doesn't freak people out or scare them too much, because some people are truly afraid of that kind of information. So you've got to be also, one's got to be sensitive to those people who are truly afraid.
Well, we have to also teach. Yeah, we also have to teach people not to be afraid, and to educate them in truth as to the fact that fear itself is another illusion. You see, they're in this rat race out of their fear of not having money, as if there is a limit to it, how much can be had. There's an insufficiency.
Exactly.
See, those are some of the lies that again are brought forth to hide the other illusions that lie underneath them. This is based, and fear, the ultimate fear is the fear of death, not understanding who one is or who we are, and not knowing from where we came and where we're going afterwards, and our responsibility in between those two boundaries, whatever that amounts to, if you get my meaning. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. My take on that is that, just to come back to the fact that we need to start with the premise that we are not alone in the universe, I believe that will happen very quickly once a contributionist type of system or social structure is embraced by the people of the planet. Because what it is really is a fertile ground for everything to blossom, as I said, from agriculture to science and technology to spirituality to art and culture, especially would explode under a contributionist system. Because what happens, is that the abundance of everything is so overwhelming under a contributionist system, it truly boggles the mind. That people, and also very important to add to that, is one of the first casualties or consequences of a contributionist system is that all crime will disappear as we know it today. And I actually used the word all crime because I really believe that all crime is in some way or another linked to money and the control of money and therefore power over others. And then obviously you've got, crimes of insanity and crimes of passion, which can be thrown in there. But if you really dissect it, then the crimes of passion and crimes of insanity often are also linked to money in some way. Because insanity can be ascribed to a genetic malfunction, which could be solved if money was not an issue.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Exactly. I was going to comment on the structure of society and what people value in others today because of this money system. They idolize people that have money or people that are put into positions, let's say like an actor or an actress or some other type of a celebrity, a sports celebrity. We worship these people because they exemplify the summit of success, which is always equated with money. Success without money is worthless. to the majority of society, because it's shunned by the very people that created this whole scheme.
Yeah.
And so you know, it's a multi-dimensional type of issue, but you're feeling that contributionism basically would cut all through that like a hot knife through butter.
It does exactly that, and it's easy for me to say that because I spent 5 years analyzing it and studying it and looking at how every aspect of society will change and convert itself into a new kind of with a new face under a contributionist system. It's easy for me to say that, and some people will take a while to come to understand it. But believe me, it is so simple and so beautiful that it really boggles the mind. And I was going to say something, it slipped my mind now, but it's really to do with also more spiritual things as well. The contributionism allows, because of the fact that there is so much abundance, everybody would have to work, and when I say work, really do what it is they're passionate about, for only a few hours a day. Otherwise, there's too much stuff, too many things, which means that there'll be a lot of free time. People will have a lot of free time to participate in arts and culture and those kind of events. So arts and culture and sports and recreation will explode, pretty much like they were a very strong theme in ancient Greece, if you think about it. And that's very exciting. And then one of the obvious questions that people ask is when they first start to embrace this and they start thinking about it, coming from a capitalistic perspective and the perspective that we are completely entrenched in of consume, more stuff shoved down our throats. The first few questions people always ask is like, well, you know, if everything's free and everyone's going to do everything for me, I'm just going to sit on my ass and do nothing and let people do everything for me. And it's just such an obvious, perspective of how we have been brought up. And it's just amazing to see how quickly people can move away from that way of thinking. The other thing is, who's gonna shovel all the crap? Who's gonna do all the dirty work? And the answers to these are just so simple. All you need to do is step outside of the capitalistic and the consumeristic society, and then say, well, if no one's earning money, if everyone is just doing what it is they love to do, I can tell you right now, the scientists and the researchers are dying to provide solutions for the removal of refuse and sewage from your homes and converting it into recycled water and fertilizer and energy and all these things. So suddenly the people that today are seeing to do the lowest paid jobs, the dirty jobs, are actually going to be done by scientists who find it a challenge to find solutions for those problems.
Yeah, imagine going so far as to not even create the dirt in the first place.
Exactly. Exactly.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Now, and that's what trips us up. When we first start thinking about contributionism, we come at it from the disgusting situation that we find ourselves as the human race, this miserable world that's been created to keep us running around, tie us up in red tape and bureaucracy and obstacles and problems and divide and conquer principles, the rich and the poor, the different classes, the different countries, the different language groups, the principles and the instruments of division that sow the seeds of separateness will break down completely, virtually instantly, because suddenly people have nothing to gain from anyone else. If you're not doing anything for money, you don't want to do anything for anyone for money. It's not like, well, if I'm going to do this for you, what am I going to get in return? That flies out the window instantly. Now it's all about, I make great shoes, and I want to make the best sport shoes in the world. So no one will have to, and once you have one of my sports shoes, you'll never have to get another pair of shoes again. you know, something like that, as opposed to how cheaply and how quickly can I make a pair of Nikes in a sweat factory somewhere in China so that I can sell it for the highest profit, and they only last a few months, so the poor sucker has to buy another pair of Nikes from me, and we can just make as much money as we can out of the poor people. Everything gets turned on its head, and it just becomes a supply of, or system of, absolute abundance.
Now, for those that are out there, I would certainly wouldn't think or imagine that someone who doesn't have a home is listening to this show on the internet right now. But for those people that would be instructed or informed that contributionism is available, what can they expect to see transpire? You know, let's say this was a coal miner. And because contributionism is not going to be using coal, this person that whose only talent is to go down an elevator shaft and spend 8 to 12 hours a day in coal dust and collapsing tunnels and basically just coming out of there wanting to eat something and go to sleep and repeat the process again, how are these people going to adapt to the situation? What can you tell them that's available to them in the immediate future?
The best news to those kind of people is that they will get immediate relief from their slavery, because that's what it is. It's absolute slavery, that kind of life. There's nothing else. There's no other way to describe it. And it's disgusting that humans still have to do that. Now, remember, the immediate answer to that is that the technology and the know-how and the science that will come out of the free society will be such that it will enable us to mine the minerals and the coal or whatever with far more advanced technology and know-how that is currently not available. Remember, also, we will not be mining coal for the use of energy, because we'll be using free energy, because there's suddenly no longer any money required. So the mining companies and the power companies are not going to use coal to generate energy. So suddenly that goes down the drain. And
yes,
the miner who sees this as his only means to an end will suddenly say, well, what else is it that I can do? And they realize that when they were a child, they actually wanted to plant seeds and make beautiful gardens. Or something like that. You know, the examples are so varied and so wide in abundance that it's absolutely beautiful to behold. And suddenly you've got a coal miner that used to slave in the coal mine just for survival. Now suddenly will say, well, I'll be the guy that plants all the seeds and give everybody seedlings in the town that I live in so that they can grow beautiful gardens. That's what I do.
Yes, I get that. I just wanted to hear what your response was going to be. And I don't say that, you know, with any malice.
Yeah, the same coal miner will say, who's actually a mathematical genius and has actually, you know, got an easy way to teach people maths or something, will go and say, well, let me teach maths to the kids in the school. Where in the current system, oh, well, you're not a teacher, you must first go to university and get a degree, only then can you teach. But the guy can't go to university and get a degree because he's got a family. But now the contributionist society will embrace that kind of a person and say, please come, share with us your knowledge, share with us what you have.
Yes. Well, it's very promising. And I'm sure that in your presentation of this information, you meet a lot of resistance. That doesn't mean that it's not valid. In fact, it makes sense. In many ways, I've been saying the same thing. Maybe in a simpler way, I've been saying that we must discover ourselves as to who we really are and take responsibility for all the things that have happened in our lives. Not from a sense of blame, but in a sense of opening ourselves to these possibilities. We don't have to accept what we've been told. If we know we've been lied to, we don't have to trust the stories that we've been given, which are called history or his story.
Yeah.
And And I know we want to have you back on the show also, Michael, so that we can explore some of these things in more detail, you know, if you're prepared to do that. I'd love to have you back in the month of August.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be touring the United States for 2 months. I've got 25 presentations all over the USA, starting in New York on the 26th of August, and going all the way down south across through Florida, across Texas to California, and then down back across the Midwest, back to Vermont, where I finish on the 23rd of October, and then I'll fly out again. So I'll be doing talks there, presentations of our discoveries of ancient civilizations. So maybe somewhere on the road while I'm in the United States, and it'll also be much easier to do it on the phone or even Skype then, because the connection on Skype will be better. But I'm really disappointed in the bad connection we had at the beginning, because that's never happened before. We normally do them very smoothly.
Well, maybe we can do it at one of your remote locations, too. Maybe there's a way to coordinate something there where we can address this or maybe even form one more event along the way, you know, where this can be filmed and documented so that we can get it out to people. This is something important that's got to spread. Now, if you would give your website out to the listeners, the ones that I know you have a couple of websites, anyone interested in getting any of your books or reading up on some of the things you have, you do have your interviews about contributionism posted on your site as well. Do you not? Or was that somewhere else?
I believe it's linked on the websites, yes. But it's also on YouTube, but I think we've got links to it. If not, we're going to be doing the links in the next few days. But my websites are slavespecies.com, slavespecies.com. And then there's zuluplanet.com. That's where you can buy my books and that kind of stuff. That's zuluplanet.com, zuluplanet.com. And then there's also the foundation, the Makomati Foundation website, which is makomati.org. That's M-A-K-O-M-A-T-I, makomati.org. And there's some information about the ancient civilizations and the structures we've been discovering. And, those are the three main websites, I would say. If you go to those, you can subscribe to my articles, especially on slavespecies.com. And then you also join the database if you're interested to know where I'll be talking in the USA. There'll be information on the website as well.
Okay. I always give my guests a parting comment. The opportunity to make a party comment, I should say. I will give you a comment too. But
excellent.
If you want to summarize the general topic of tonight's show, and I know we talked about many things, but in terms of what's on your heart and what you like to share with people to inspire them to become involved in something new and something that really is uncharted territory for most of mankind. What would you say?
I would say that we are getting very close to answering the fundamental questions of our humanity that's been asked for many, many years. Who are we? Where do we come from? And why are we here? I believe that we are starting to see the real evidence and get some real answers to those three very basic questions that we need to answer. If we can't answer those questions, then it's going to be very difficult for us to move ahead as a species. We're finding the evidence of who we are, where we come from, and why we're here. We're finally finding the physical evidence to support many of the ancient civilizations' writings, that we are a genetically manipulated clone species. It was created and put to work in the gold mines in southern Africa. That then spread throughout the world. We are now a controlled group of beings by a small group of royal political elites, individuals that have been controlling this new human race on this planet for thousands of years. We are starting to see the evidence, the overwhelming evidence of that. So we are at a stage now where we can answer many of these questions and get a sense of relief about this, about those previously grey areas about our humanity. Now we can start making decisions as to how we're going to take this forward. And I believe that the concepts that, like contributionism and many people have had similar ideas around how we move forward as a species, I believe that these kind of concepts are directly linked to higher levels of consciousness and higher levels of understanding and connecting into higher levels of spirituality and understanding the fact that there is unity is the only way forward, and allowing us to move in that direction and liberating ourselves from the slavery into which we've been created and the slavery under which we are currently controlled. And this information will allow us to take the necessary steps and make the kind of decisions to move in that direction.
Very well put, and I agree that that's definitely on the path to resolving many of the world's problems in a very short amount of time. Michael, if I could leave you with a thought. You mentioned cloning several times, and that's a topic that comes up even in my own research of a particular political figure sitting in Washington right now. I had a recent discussion with scientist inventor Jim Murray, who's a regular Friday night guest on this show. And we were talking about this concept that we're fed in evolution, that species jump one from one to another. Say the chimpanzee to the human being is one of their favorite ones. And he said it just doesn't occur. It doesn't happen that way. Now, you can manipulate genes in a laboratory, but in nature, that just does not occur. And I said, Jim, I said, there may be one exception. And he said, what's that? And I said, you can take a politician and put him in Washington and turn him into a jackass overnight.
So. Yeah, well, you said it. And I think many people will find that very humorous, and good on you for that.
I just wanted to share that. There's outside the box. There are all kinds of possibilities.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. And I need to get a copy of your book. I want to make arrangements to do that with you in the coming days here. And I will happily put a link to your site on my books page. I often feature interesting books from many of my guests free of charge. It's just there to set up a link in case someone perusing the books that I have on my site decide they want to get a copy of one or more of your books. If with your permission, I'll do that. And
absolutely.
I'll also publish the information as to where one can acquire your book, if at all, here in the States. So
yes, wonderful. I'll send that information to you on the email.
Okay, very good. All right, I want to thank you very much for being on Evident Footprints. And we'll try to get you on maybe at a convenient time before you actually leave on your journey, if we can do that. I hope you can spare a night for us.
That'll be fabulous. Let's work towards that. Thanks very much.
Thanks all right.
For having
thank you
on you. Your show. And it's been lovely chatting to you.
Okay, likewise. And you, I should say you have a good morning because you're 6 hours ahead of us.
Yeah,
and for some of us, it is morning already. So,
I'm about to get in my car and drive home from Johannesburg right now. So, Don, thanks very much, and I look forward to chatting to you again.
All right. You take care, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and tonight's special guest, Michael Tellinger. We will work to get him back on the show again. This is very interesting. topic, and if you can feel his energy, he's enthusiastic and passionate about changing this matrix. Just let's just get rid of it and create something new. I've said it before, and tonight is another one of those opportunities to stress that point. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com. Also want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom at bbsradio.com for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me again tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than Ms. Ingrid Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.